Folks, have you checked out the Irish History Podcast shop recently? Right now, I have a sale of 30% off everything when you use the code SALE30. So go to irishhistorypodcast.ie/shop and get 30% off everything when you use the discount code SALE30.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Irish History Podcast. My name is Finn Dwyer, and today I've got a pretty special episode of the show. This is the first episode, I suppose, in what you might call the beginning of a post-COVID-19 world, because for the first time in, God, nearly 2 years, I'm joined by two guests who, I'm delighted to say, we're all vaccinated, so we've been able to record this in my house. But my two guests are the hosts of a podcast called Snugcast. The first is DJ Walsh. You might remember DJ joined me on a podcast back in pre-COVID times where we talked about drinking in the medieval period, and I'm also joined by Owen, the co-host of the Snugcast. And today we've got a pretty special show because we're going to talk a bit about, because hopefully we're coming to the end of certainly one phase of COVID-19, how it shapes up to probably one of the most famous pandemics in history, and that's the Black Death. So what we're going to do is we'll have, a fourth guest in, a man who lived here in Kilkenny 650 years ago and left us a record of what it was like to live through the Black Death. So I'm going to introduce a couple of discussions where we're going to listen to his words, and then we'll see what we think or how COVID-19 shapes up with the Black Death. Before we get into all that, I'm going to ask the lads to introduce themselves. DJ, do you want to go first?
Yeah, thanks, Finn. My name is DJ Walsh. I'm delighted to be back on the Irish History Podcast. I'm a big fan of the podcast and of yourself and your work. And co-host of the Snugcast podcast with Owen here alongside me. And pre-COVID, our podcast was pub-based, where we go and have a couple of pints in the pub and just talk a bit of nonsense about whatever came to mind. And obviously then COVID changed that, so we had to go online. And then for my day job then, I'm a cancer pharmacist in University Hospital Waterford.
And I can probably echo the exact same things as DJ there. I suppose long time listener, first time caller. so delighted to be on this, and can't wait to get this discussion underway.
I had the book upside down there, folks, but I will start this properly. No, we're going to kick off with, as I say, the fourth guest here today, I suppose, is the ghost of a man that lived in Kilkenny 650 years ago. So I've gone through an account he left of the Black Death, and we're going to kick off with the first one because this really struck me about how people in the medieval period might have heard a bit about the Black Death. Now, maybe I should just say a couple of words on the Black Death. Maybe people haven't heard about it. Black Death took place in the late 1340s, early 1350s. And depending on the sources and the accounts you read, it probably killed somewhere in the region of 30 to 50% of the population of Europe. We might talk a bit more about it, go into bigger detail, but I'm going to kick off with this quote. This is what John Clynn, the man I'm talking about here, he was a Franciscan friar in Kilkenny, and this is what he heard about the Black Death before it ever arrived. So he says, in the city of Avignon, where the Roman Curia was flourishing and operating, the plague began in the time of Pope Clement VI from the preceding January, when there both the churches and the cemetery of the city were not sufficient to accommodate the bodies of the dead for burying, and the Lord Pope himself arranged for one new cemetery to be consecrated in which the dead killed by the disaster of the plague might be laid, so that from the month of May right up to the translation of St. Thomas, Monday, the 7th of July, 1348, 50,000 and more bodies were buried in the same cemetery. Now, John Klein may well have heard about that before the Black Death reached Kilkenny. The Black Death wouldn't reach Kilkenny for about 6 months after the event he talks about there. But the reason I thought that was nice, or sorry, not nice, God, it's not nice. The reason I thought that was interesting is that it made me kind of think back to the start of COVID and some of the crazy stories that people heard. And I suppose the first thing I was thinking back to is the first time I heard of COVID. I remember my brother showing me a video from a hospital in China where there was just huge overcrowding, people wearing masks, coughing. And you looked at this scene and it was at Christmas 2019. Christmas. And I remember looking at it going, that's just not true, or like in no way having any, you know, where you're kind of going, is this like maybe some like conspiracy theories against China, or, you know, you're kind of, it's so remote. Do you remember the first time you came across COVID and what your reaction was?
I suppose for me, it was a similar thing where it was one of those WhatsApp videos that was being sent around. And for me, it was people in China collapsing on the street, was like, and in subway stations and stuff over there, like of this, like groups of people like being bundled over, coughing. I was like, what is this? It didn't seem real at the time. And even reflecting back on it, I don't know how real was that video curated in terms of like what actually COVID transpired to be. So it was very much so Dawn of the Dead kind of esque video that was coming along. And again, I suppose we'll probably touch on it later, but maybe a bit of fear mongering kind of going on there. But obviously with touches of reality. But yeah, again, I suppose that WhatsApp kind of phenomenon was kind of my kind of start of it anyway, of finding out about it.
Yeah, and it I suppose there's this element that I had in terms of, obviously, Owen, with our professional lives, we would subscribe to a lot of medical journals and you know, we'd get these emails that would be like, you know, medical alerts from around the world. And fairly frequently, you might see an email that would say like, you know, new respiratory disease in some part of the world. And it actually happens so frequently that you get this kind of cognitive dissonance from it all. And you're kind of like, oh, like, especially given the fact that, in fairness, like Southeast Asia and the Eastern world in particular are really good at stopping the spread of these.
SARS kind of, and stuff
exactly, yeah, and MERS. So we've had this experience before about a respiratory virus, a respiratory illness, this kind of novel respiratory illness in that part of the world, and that it didn't spread. So my first coming across it was literally an email popped up saying new respiratory virus discovered in Wuhan in China, and source unknown, and like a little brief outline of the symptoms. So I had it didn't ring any bell to say that this was in any way dangerous to Europe or the Western world. So that was how I first came across it. And it's really interesting to say that, like, you know, you go on then to have, you know, 650, 660 years ago, a Franciscan in Kilkenny talking about, you know, these mass burial graves or lack of capacity with burial sites. Very quickly, in the turn of the new year, then we came into these videos of, you know, China building hospitals at a scale that we've never seen before, and burial sites being built at a scale that we've never seen before. So I suppose it definitely links up in terms of the early reports that way.
Definitely echoes history that way, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm you might be able to hear the turn of pages in the background at home, and I'm actually looking through literally John Klein's account of the Black Death in 1348, and obviously that transpired to be an awful lot worse than COVID, or certainly the medieval world didn't have the capacity to deal with it. And I'm actually just noting before that he had talked about events that were going on in Dublin, actually, in the summer of 1348, and it would be a while before it would actually reach Kilkenny. It wasn't really until probably Christmas 1348 that it reached here. And in that, just before he talks about Rome, actually, he talks about Dublin and Drogheda have been almost destroyed, wasted of inhabitants, and that in Dublin alone, from the beginning of August right up to Christmas, 14,000 men died. And again, these are huge exaggerations. Like, at the time, like, the population of Dublin was probably about 10,000 people. But it's probably as well that thing of people trying to gain some sense of, like, what does the, you know, we are trying to grasp onto reality. Yeah. I think that is an interesting one, because obviously I think no matter where people are listening to this, I think one feature of COVID-19 has been conspiracy theories, be it like the totally wild ones that would almost say that like COVID didn't exist, true to the more, I suppose, maybe tweaking of COVID and the nature of the disease. But it's funny, in the medieval world, they had their own version of conspiracy theories. And then as he goes on to talk about it, now, obviously, it's a conspiracy of a kind, but it's more of a medieval kind of millenarian prophecy. But he spends a lot of time talking about this, and he talks about the high cedar of Lebanon will be set on fire, and at the same time, Tripoli will be destroyed and Acre captured. The Margrave will overcome the world, and Saturn will lie in ambush for Jupiter. The bat will drive away the leader from, I can't read the next word, and then it says, within 15 years there'll be one faith and one God, and the other will vanish, and the sons of Jerusalem will be freed from captivity. A certain race will be born without a head. Woe to the clergy and the unfruitful. And he kind of goes on to talk about this. He finishes off actually this section, and he says, in such calmness, news will be heard of a new Antichrist. Be vigilant. And it's not quite the conspiracy theories we obviously have today, but I think what he's, it's his understanding, it's how he relates to this, and they go for this, I suppose, the supernatural understanding. And it's a bit mixed in maybe with some histories as well, because he talks about the fall of Acre, which had fallen in 1291. But I think it, when I was reading that, and I've read it a couple of times, I wrote a book on the Black Death years ago, but like I've read this stuff more recently, and you kind of, you know, you reflect back on your own life, you can't. But I look at that and I'm going, yeah, conspiracy theories are probably the same thing. It's where like the world as you know it is kind of falling apart around you to a certain degree or another, you know. And then someone comes up with a fantastical, extreme explanation that can explain everything. So for him, he's kind of got, like, you know, obviously references to God, the Antichrist, that can explain this chaotic situation. But I think here we had the similar stuff in the beginning. There was, I suppose, not conspiracy. Well, yeah, they were conspiracy theories. I remember just around when lockdown started, the WhatsApp voice messages about the army about to be sent out onto the street. And I was only thinking about that when you guys were coming up. I was thinking, like, you know, what were the stages of that first lockdown? And that was definitely one of those, like, you know, quite, I don't know, is anxious or alarm, like definitely feeding into that like strain, because you don't know what's going to happen with COVID. But I remember that WhatsApp message, and you're kind of wondering, yeah, this sounds very unlikely, but given that the rate of change of everything that's going on, you're going, well, maybe the government might have to, like, you know, send soldiers out to forcibly close shops that people wouldn't go with the lockdown. I don't know, did you come across any memorable conspiracies? Or
that army one was definitely, like, I think we all came across that. I think as well that the army one was so shocking because, you know, obviously Finn, you've got listenership around the world. Like, we have basically a negligible military presence on the streets in Ireland, and that's why the concept of the army going around the streets would be a like complete extreme for Ireland. And I think as well, There were some mad conspiracy theories that this was biological warfare was one that was being put around quite a lot. And I think it's quite obvious that to me it seems quite obvious that this is ultimately the extractivism and deforestation means that we're going to come in contact with a lot more of these zoological born viruses that we otherwise wouldn't have if we left some of them habitats alone. I think that's like the natural progression of the way the world is going, as opposed to, you know, there was some mad conspiracy theories around that COVID was cultivated in a lab, and I think there was one at one stage that it was like almost a Cold War style spy kind of warfare thing that had gone awry, and that basically that they were threatening each other, and it was an accidental leak was another one that I think that came up on a Reddit stream or something like that at one stage. And I think as well, like, it's certainly John Clinton's time, it was, you know, there was the supernatural and the natural, and a lot of the theories were born out of just those two different worlds, whereas we have so much access to so much information in this information age, the capacity for a variety of conspiracy theories, like, just kind of plumes out of that. And I couldn't keep up with the conspiracy theories between March and June last year.
Yeah, it's interesting to think of conspiracy theories just as a concept in themselves, isn't it? Like, it's based off a lack of understanding for a thing. So in this scenario, we're talking about COVID-19, and back then it was the Black Death, and you know, you're trying to find that solution, and that solution then was maybe a religious element back then. And as DJ was saying there, it's kind of, you know, we have so much information now that you can kind of think up of anything as an answer. But it's also kind of interesting to see, like, let's take cancer as an illness, for example. There is so much understanding about cancer, and you don't get as many conspiracy theories about cancer as a disease group, you know, whereas like this, at the start there was no understanding at all about it. And therefore people were able to just kind of jump on and like think of things. I think one of the big conspiracy theories that kind of came out was the use of masks. And like, what, you know, do we use them? Don't we use them? Can it stay on the mask? Are you breathing in? Who's been protected? You know, it's still going on, that kind of lack of understanding. And we don't have the evidence still. And obviously, as we're kind of coming along now to the kind of mass vaccination area, vaccines are a huge, huge kind of conspiracy theory for people as to how effective they are, or how not effective they are, and you know, what are going to be the long term effects of it, you know. So
I was going to say, Finn, I can dispel the Bill Gates 5G conspiracy theory because I live in rural Kilkenny, as you know, and I haven't had phone coverage since I've got the vaccines.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
What I find really interesting is, well, I suppose if we're talking about like the history of a really recent event, like COVID, and it's like we're talking about the history of something that's happened in the last 2 years, that you can go back like nearly seven centuries, and human reaction, you know, it's similar. It's not the same, but it's similar in that we, you know, people want
answers.
Yeah, they want simple ones, like, yeah. And you know, giving someone a book and going, look, you know, you need to read that and maybe read a couple of different theories about this, and somewhere in there you'll find something that helps you. It's not comforting, you know. And even like during COVID, you're kind of going, God, I wish, you know, in a way, some of this you could just like, that someone could tell me, this is the answer, this is how long this is going to last for. And I suppose the rise of, one thing that I kind of took from this is the rise of conspiracy theories is alarming in terms of like how society functions and how we deal with problems. Because if, you know, conspiracy theories don't help us deal with problems, because we tend to, if we were to believe them, we would tackle a different problem, and that's not the issue. But in a way, seeing that that's a human reaction, maybe throughout the ages, is a bit more comforting in that, like, this is what humans do, and we can get past this. But
do you think about, like, say, the proliferation of like these conspiracy theories, like back in the Black Death era, would, you know, there's this account that you've written here, or that's here. I wonder how far that would have gone out into society. Like, how many people would have like taken that as gospel, as opposed to, you know, the Twitterati out there now?
I think people, from reading around the Black Death, like, it's not uncommon to find these all across Europe. How much an illiterate population has access to these, we'll never know. But you'd have to imagine, like, John Glynn was a very educated guy in Kilkenny in the 1340s. If he's saying it around now, you know, people aren't meeting up as much. You know, people did actually, I suppose, to one degree or another, socially isolate during the 1340s as well, because they just knew if you met someone and they had it, you're going to get it. But you know, you'd have to think if quote unquote thought leaders of the 1340s are saying it must have been, and I think, but it's, I suspect it's a much wider, it's just a human reaction. And that if you don't have access to other information, then you may just settle on the easiest, most straightforward.
Yeah. What stood out for me with this, especially around the issue of access to information, is in this information age, what I found is the interpretation of the information as well has been a big issue with COVID conspiracy theories, especially one, as you rightly bring up, masks. And what I found when you take a step back and look back at what was happening was, you know, an institute in, say, Vienna, for example, would do a study on the transmission of COVID-19 in people who were wearing, you know, surgical masks. But that might be a very controlled study about just a unique aspect. And the thing, the problem that people have in trying to understand this is a very complex, multifactorial, like no two situations when you meet someone during a pandemic are the same. The settings are different. The wind direction is different. The humidity in the air is different. And we didn't even fully understand at the beginning of the pandemic that this was an aerosol airborne based virus. There was a huge focus on droplets and surfaces when actually, you know, we didn't get to understand that until the lived experience of the pandemic came true. So even not even just conspiracy theories, but our understanding of the virus kind of had to evolve over time as well. And again, that was purely based on not just taking conspiracy theories that were founded off poor information, but even good reliable information being interpreted poorly at the time and having to adapt to that lived situation was a big factor.
Yeah, so. And I agree with, say, vaccines again. Like I found a lot of, say, some of the headlines that might have come out with regards to studies, it would have been a COVID-19 vaccine gives you 6 months immunity. But that's only because 6 months of data has been collected. You could actually get 9 months or a year, but that, you know, we haven't had the vaccine that far. So now recently, 9 months of immunity has been shown with the COVID-19 vaccine. But it's that, I suppose, it's that interpretation of that headline, like COVID-19 vaccine gives you 6 months immunity. And you can interpret that as, is that all? Is that all I get from it? Rather than actually it's 6 months now. How far, like with another study now, it'll be 6, 9 or 12, but we have to wait for that data to be released.
I suppose one thing that I wanted to do and bring the John Klein to the table is this has been a tremendously difficult time, I think, for everyone who's lived through it. There's no question about that. And what I'm about to say, I'm not in any way trying to underplay the severity of COVID and the difficulties, but I suppose is like how it shapes up. How does this shape up what we've lived through past experiences? And what John Klein had to say about his experience in the 1340s, if he was here, I suppose I'm the 650-year-old man in this conversation, and so he says, as he continues his account, and he goes, it was not heard from the beginning of the world for so many men to have died of plague, famine, and other infirmities in such a time, for there was an earthquake that stretched for many miles and swallowed and overthrew cities, villas, and castles. That disease entirely stripped villas, cities, castles, and towns of inhabitants of men, so that scarcely anyone would live in them. The plague was so contagious that those touching the dead or even the sick were immediately infected and died. And the one confessing and the confessor were together led to the grave. And because of fear and horror, men scarcely ventured out to discharge works of piety and mercy, namely visiting the sick and burying the dead. And for many died from carbuncles and from ulcers and from pustules that could be seen on shins and under the armpits. Some died as if in a frenzy from pain of the head, others from spitting blood. This year was unusual beyond custom, full of wonders and many unusual signs, yet fairly fertile and abundant, even though full of death and mortality. And then he actually gives one very personal account of the tragedy. He said, in the convent of the miners of Drogheda, that's a name for the Franciscans, 25, and in Dublin of that same order, 23, died from the beginning up to Christmas. And they would probably be people that he knew. But I guess in that, like, now that's a very dramatic account of the Black Death. But certainly by the time the plague came to an end, we're talking about 40% of the populations of cities, maybe like Dublin, had died. And it's in very quick time, like far quicker than COVID has been for us, 6 months. Because essentially those people saying, let it rip through the population. The Black Death ripped through the population. But in the grand scheme, how will this shape up in, you know, like, it's very hard for us to have historical perspective on what we've just lived through. And part of me goes, well, compared to the Black Death, you know, it's not going to be a pandemic on that level. Or is it because that we have had science to really stop the worst effects of it, and that people who got sick were in many cases able to go to hospital? And obviously, tragically, like, we've had like large numbers of deaths, but maybe not on the scale, you know, obviously that he talks about there. But yeah, like, how is it because of science? Like, have we, in some ways, I'm kind of hopeful that I think as a society that we have tackled one problem to, you know, there's been huge gaping holes in the way it's done. And I don't mean Ireland, I mean across the world, that like within a year we're getting on top of this. The plague came back every 10 years for several centuries. It doesn't appear, touch wood, that that's what's going to happen with COVID.
I think we've much greater capacity to cope and react. Like, we had the DNA sequence to COVID very rapidly, and within 6 months we had a vaccine. But I think where, and I hope history reflects this, where we have massively fallen down is our things like social constructs that have impeded the global response. So stuff like patent protection and stuff like this for vaccines, where I think, you know, you look at we're here now, we're able to have a few cans in your house, and we're privileged to be able to do that now, where versus people in India, people in Brazil at the moment have no, there's no end in sight. And I think there's this, we know a lot, not more, in this day and age than they did in 1348. So I think we're in a privileged situation that we could be afforded to do a lot more, but we're not. We're not doing it. And I think that's the one thing where I'm a bit reserved about this, is saying, like, you know, there would have been an awful lot of capacity to deal with this globally a lot quicker if we used all the tools that were available to us, and we didn't. And that's where I'm a bit skeptical about, you know, preventing this happening again. Will we foolishly again put the concept of the global economy ahead of public health? Because what we've, like, absolutely been demonstrated in the last 16, 17 months is the global economy is dependent on robust healthcare, robust public healthcare for people, and to make sure that the population, the force, the workforce, the people who drive, you know, those global economies are healthy, and that we don't provide barriers to that. And I do think we've missed the trick in terms of allowing. It's almost like, you know, history will be written by people who will say, like, weren't Ireland great and the US great and the Western world was great that they donated vaccines to X, Y, and Z. But we only started doing that when we were happy enough that we had enough for ourselves. And I think there's a, you know, it's very hard to articulate it well how I feel about it, but we've certainly, I don't think we've been in this together globally. And again, I think, like, the Black Death was pretty much confined to Europe in the main, if I'm not mistaken.
Slightly, but
you know, and again that could just be the way history was written, that we mainly have European accounts. But
yeah, for sure. I think that's yeah, where the most memorable stuff, exactly. Like, it affected China and India as well, but again, it's, as you say, I think it probably to an extent reinforced your point.
Yeah, exactly. So that, and I think that there's a bit of it's quite difficult to grasp the fact that, you know, while we've had magnificent feats of science and we've had great sacrifice by people in social distancing and sacrificing a year of their lives, we've also let down the global south in particular in how we've dealt with it. Once we identified that we had vaccines that were.
I suppose I'm trying to think of it now from more of, a future mindset. We're still quite in the middle. What are we, June 2021 now, where we're recording this podcast, and we're still kind of in the midst of it. It's kind of hard to reflect, isn't it? It hasn't passed, and it's very hard. But what I do think about is, we had a live YouTube podcast there at the very start. And in it, we were kind of surmising, what will this be like post-COVID? What will people do? You know, and we said, you know, we believed at the time that there might be a fear, a lingering fear of, you know, will people ever kind of step foot into a pub again, or into it, will they step
social situations?
Social situations, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And will they? Well, like I think there might be definitely some bit of lingering fear, I suppose, over, you know, on certain people. But maybe
yeah,
some
think though, I have to say, so I got vaccinated. I'm vaccinated about a month now because of an underlying condition. No, I don't know anyone with a vaccine, so don't contact me. No, but I got underlying. I was lucky in that regard that I have an underlying condition, oddly. But I have to say, prior to that, I was like really, really, maybe even overly cautious around COVID. But very quickly, my attitude shifted a lot. And anything that where I guess I was taking a risk for myself, I just stopped taking, or I just did what I wanted to. Obviously, you keep on, you know, like the wider measures because we're protecting each other and we still don't know whether I'm carrying it and passing it on or whatever. But I do think, I would have thought, God, the world has changed in terms of social interaction. I think when we get to that point where, like, you know, if we can get to herd immunity, say in Ireland, if you can hear something in the background, that's my dog, Bill. But anyway, but I do think we are going to get to a point. And actually, if you look at, like, people often talk about how the Black Death transformed the world. And often, though, that's kind of exaggerated in that it probably took place in a time that where huge change was already underway. And I think, like, and I, you know, the comparison between the Black Death and something like the plague, I'm just not sure we can really relate to that, given what we have, you know, that given that we had a health system that was able to help people that probably would almost certainly have died without it. But I do feel that I think we will go back to the social situations. Like, there's going to be people grieving, and I think that's going to be a huge thing.
That's what I was going to say. Like, there's like the personal accounts there that he has at the end of that excerpt. And I, like, one quote that really stuck out to me was kind of in our lockdown 2.0 coming into Christmas there, when it kind of started spiking again, all of the cases and deaths started spiking, that someone said to me, you know, it's gone from numbers to names. You knew somebody at that point at Christmas. You had heard of someone who had gotten COVID. And, you know, luckily, I haven't been affected by anybody who's died from it. But, you know, there is going to be, I think, some sort of, like, lingering grief, as you suppose, for, like, in the country. I think people will have known people. So it's going to be not interesting, isn't the word, but it's going to be a change, I think, in the mentality of the Irish population.
But our relationship with death is a lot different than it was in 1348 as well. And like we live in a time where you can live in Australia or New Zealand, and if a loved one dies, you can be back for the funeral. Whereas, you know, COVID took that previously known capacity to grieve with your loved ones away from a huge section of the world as well. So I think that the societal damage will be a lot of people not being able to grieve and trying to process that grief over a much longer period of time.
Actually, interestingly, just when we're talking about this, and I might wrap it up on this one, but after the Black Death, one thing that people noted, and it's a thing that people noted, not just, you know, I'm not talking about one account, like across the continent and even beyond, people talked about that kind of people became more individualistic and maybe almost even selfish on the back of it, because, you know, he's talking there about how, say, people wouldn't bury the dead, and in some cases, say, priests wouldn't come and give the last rites. It's a very understandable kind of human fear. I would wonder, though, will we have a different reaction? And I know, like, totally taking into account all the stuff that you said, DJ, but at the same time, one of the big narratives, like, I guess people like yourselves, but like health workers continued to go to work and didn't go, do you know what, I'm not going to go in, because obviously, particularly at the start where there wasn't adequate PPE and stuff like that, where the risks were enormous. And we still didn't really understand the disease either then. And I just wonder, will we kind of have different takeaways than that, if that was the takeaway from the in the 1340s that it had? And again, now I think I was talking to somebody else in another podcast about this, and I was saying that I just didn't know. This was back in the first lockdown, and I just didn't know would it have the same impact. They were asking me about the Black Death again. And I do wonder, because the death toll is so much lower, are we going to be talking about it? You know, if that was a tidal wave, Are we talking about a significant event, but not this like generation defining, era defining event? You know, that like if we move on and in 5 years' time, you know, COVID will be significant. I'm not saying it definitely will be, but that we may have moved beyond it, you know, in maybe ways that they couldn't.
I think we'll move beyond it quite quickly.
Yeah.
I think people will revert to quote unquote normality quite quickly afterwards, because I think, you know, I think life goes on and it'll be quite fast paced. But I think from an overall overarching societal aspect, I would hope we would be more collectivistic in our outlook and that we would think of the greater good a bit more. And I think as well, I think you'll see a large parts of society will want to do that. But it's very hard to see, you would hope that people would appreciate the smaller things in life a bit more. Like you said, I think you hinted at there, Finn, we found out very quickly in COVID that the workforce that we rely on most are people stacking shelves in supermarkets, people, you know, delivering food and stuff like that. People who are not lauded as everyday heroes, people who are certainly not rewarded with riches. So I would like to think that we would appreciate those type of people an awful lot more. But not sure if we will. Like I found, even as you've touched on, and it's the same for me myself, I also have an underlying health condition. So when I was vaccinated, I became an awful lot more lax and a bit more accepting of social norms very quickly. And I think we both maybe have fallen back into that a lot quicker than maybe I would have thought I would have, definitely.
No, I definitely. Okay, I'm going to give the last word to Owen, and uplifting him in this conversation to finish off on.
No, I think I'm going to echo Darren's thing. I think there probably will be some bit of a bounce back of collectivism. I think people, say, who were working in Dublin and mightn't have gone home to their parents at the weekends or, you know, things like that, I think there'll be a bit more of that now. And I think people definitely appreciate, like, to give a nod to our podcast, if people see the pubs and how rammed they are, people are loving kind of life at the moment. And I think it's great to see, and I hope it continues, that people kind of support the businesses and everybody who kind of struggled throughout the lockdown.
Okay, we're going to finish it up there. I want to thank the two lads for coming up and recording this. If you want to hear more, I think we're going to record a Snugcast. So if you go search out Snugcast, you'll hear us talking there, where it'll probably be a little more free-flowing, and I'm not sure what we're going to talk about there. But
we won't be talking about the Black Debt.
I hope you've all enjoyed this. I guess this is another episode in the Writer's Block series, but I'm hoping to have that sorted and get back to the War of Independence at some point in the very near future. But I hope you all have a good week, folks, and that, yeah, I hope you're all doing well. Until next time, Sláinte.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.